Yeah, this is really unbelievable. You're talking about basic coverage of the most important and serious issues. And you have an administration that wants to hide and warp coverage of their own incompetence, of their own failings, of their own crimes, like these that you covered earlier in the program and the deaths of hundreds of school children. They don't want the U.S. media covering this story, and they are showing that they are willing to threaten the use of regulations, of government policy, of changing owners in order to push those media companies into silence, in order to have journalists question what stories are they going to cover, wonder if their bosses are going to back them up when they do serious reporting on the crimes of this administration, whether that's kidnapping people and sending them to other countries, whether that's launching a war. The most serious stories that we need the newsrooms with the biggest resources covering, the Trump administration is signaling you better think twice. And unfortunately, the billionaire owners of these companies are signaling back, if you'll give us favors, if you'll give us mergers, we're willing to do your bidding. This works because the CEOs have backed off, and they're going to keep doing it until these media companies start standing up.
Craig Aaron, co-CEO of Free Press and Free Press Action. We'll link to your new article, Warmongers Come for the Media. We'll be live streaming our 30th anniversary event at democracynow.org next Monday. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming online at kboo.fm.
KBOO Community Radio is now on Venmo. Follow us and send a donation anytime at KBOO Radio. That's at KBOO Radio. Thanks.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Donald Trump wants to log Western Oregon old-growth timber.
The I-5 replacement project costs are expected to skyrocket.
And the Northern Lights will be visible again this evening.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, March 18th, 2026. I'm Terrence Burns.
And I'm Josh Salem. The Trump administration wants to quadruple the timber harvest on nearly 2.5 million acres of federal lands in western Oregon. Logging in 18 western Oregon counties could get rolled back to the pre-1990s harvest levels, which worries environmental advocates. Areas of critical concern are the Yaquina Head Outstanding Natural Area north of Newport, Valley of the Giants west of Salem, and Dollar Mountain in Josephine County, among others. In a Bureau of Land Management proposal, the Trump administration plans to increase U.S. timber production to reduce reliance on foreign imports. Their proposal cited a 1937 act that designated some areas as timberlands, in which timber would be managed for forest production, harvested, and sold. The Bureau claims the 1994 Northwest Forest Plan caused both timber production and financial output to drop from more than $109 million in 1989 to roughly $21 million in 1995. The Northwest Forest Plan helped to protect this northern spotted owl and marbled murrelet, which were designated as endangered species. The BLM says any additional revenue generated by the proposed logging would be allocated into the U.S. Treasury and services within 18 counties in western Oregon. The Bureau also hypothesizes that logging in western Oregon could reduce the risk of catastrophic wildfires. That's not supported by science. Studies in the 2010s showed logging increases fire intensity and risk and causes forests to burn more severely when they do catch fire. Environmental advocates say the Bureau's proposal would devastate old-growth forests and endanger federally protected wildlife in the impacted lands.
Cost estimates for the new Interstate 5 bridge across the Columbia River are skyrocketing. Those costs for the new bridge linking Oregon and Washington jumped from $6.6 billion in 2022 to more than $14 million, and the numbers are expected to climb. At a Tuesday press event, Washington Governor Bob Ferguson exclaimed, quote, "I'm not looking back. We're building this damn bridge. That's happening." Oregon Governor Tina Kotek said in a statement that leaders should commit available funding to the core of the project. Kotek said, quote, "We can deliver what Oregonians have been waiting for decades. We need a new bridge, and it's time to start building it," end quote. As both states wait for a Coast Guard decision to determine the bridge height, state officials fear replacing the bridge will affect neighboring businesses. The original Columbia Crossing project was originally started in 2007. It has been politically fraught for years. The current bridge is nearly a century old, lacks seismic upgrades, and has narrow lanes that create bottlenecks on both sides of the river. The new Interstate Bridge Replacement Program says a 116-foot high bridge would require $140 million in compensation payments to companies doing business along the Columbia River during the construction. Transportation planners seek roughly $1 billion from Federal Transit Administration's Capital Investment Program for the light rail portion of the project. Both states have a commitment of an additional $1 billion each. Critics and supporters of the plan alike fear that once the project starts, it will never end. Joe Courtwright, a political economist for the project critic, recently warned the revised expense could exceed $17 billion based on public records. Courtwright said, quote, "The reality is they'll never stop with phase one. Start construction and you're signing up for a $15 billion in 20 years of construction hell," end quote. Courtwright and others believe it is reckless to build a bridge in phases as money becomes available.
A Drug Enforcement Administration agent will not face charges for the death of a Salem cyclist in 2023. But the decision may have more to do with the U.S. Supreme Court than it does the facts of the case. The cyclist, 53-year-old Margan Allen, was struck and killed by a truck driven by DEA agent Samuel Landis during a March 28, 2023 stakeout. The Marion County District Attorney's Office dismissed the charge against the agent following review of the Federal Appellate Court's dismissal of the criminal case. In a statement from prosecutors, quote, "The decision was made after carefully weighing whether to take the rare step of petitioning the United States Supreme Court and the potential impact such a decision could have on future cases," end quote. After Allen was struck by Agent Landis, neighbors and eyewitnesses rushed to administer first aid. Allen was pronounced dead once she arrived at Salem Health Hospital. Landis was accused of running a stop sign and speeding through a residential neighborhood. Landis' lawyers say that because the accident occurred during the course of his work as a DEA agent, he should not be held criminally liable. The case against the agent moved to federal court because federal immunity is not a defense in circuit court. The ruling does not protect Landis from a civil lawsuit. Allen's family filed a $2.5 million lawsuit in federal court against Landis and the DEA. That case remains ongoing.
An increase in Oregon's transient lodging tax is expected to generate more than $30 million a year to fund environmental and wildlife conservation programs. The measure increases the tax on hotel rooms and other lodging by 1.25% and will fund efforts to conserve wildlife and preserve habitats. Mark Richardson has more on the story.
Oregon lawmakers have passed a bipartisan bill that increases the state's lodging tax to direct new revenue to statewide conservation efforts. The 1.25% tax is expected to generate over $30 million per year for environmental and wildlife programs. Colin Reynolds, program advisor at Defenders of Wildlife Northwest, says over time, advocates were able to overcome opposition from the lodging industry.
We had a coalition of over 100 businesses supporting this bill. We know that people who either visit or move to Oregon will patronize our business. So the better our environment is, the more people will come.
A 2024 report found Oregon's outdoor recreation generates $16 billion in consumer spending and supports 192,000 jobs. Reynolds says even with the increase, Oregon will still have the third lowest lodging tax in the U.S. In 2025, the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife identified 320 at-risk species, including the southern resident killer whale, American pika, and tufted puffin. Madison Kenny with the Friends of the Columbia Gorge says the new funding will fill a critical need.
This bill provides a smart solution to conserving the natural resources that fuel our thriving outdoor recreation economy. It is important to fund wildlife conservation proactively because it is far more expensive to respond once a species is close to extinction.
Funded programs include wildlife passage and risk reduction, anti-poaching, invasive species response, and wolf coexistence efforts. House Bill 4134 is awaiting Governor Tina Kotek's signature. For Oregon News Service, I'm Mark Richardson.
Washington and Oregon residents have a chance of seeing the northern lights tonight. That's if the clouds part and skywatchers can get away from light pollution. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration issued a moderate geomagnetic storm watch from the sun this weekend. The sun has a roughly 11-year cycle of magnetic activity that can create the northern lights or the aurora borealis on Earth. Every 11 years, the sun's magnetic field flips. This year, Earth exits that solar maximum, or the midway point in the cycle, which is actually good for seeing auroras. NOAA Space Weather Prediction Center keeps a tonight and tomorrow night prediction forecast that can be viewed online at swpc.noaa.gov.
With over 100 data centers either completed or in development across 12 counties bordering the Columbia River, a new report finds the facilities could knock Washington and Oregon off track of their climate emission goals. The report finds the center will require the equivalent of 4 times the electricity demand of Seattle, and many tech companies are proposing getting that energy from fossil fuels. Isabel Charlet has more on that story.
A new report claims the spread of data centers is threatening Washington and Oregon's shift to renewable energy. The report released by Columbia Riverkeeper identifies over 100 data centers that are completed or in progress across 12 counties bordering the Columbia River. Kelly Campbell, policy director for the organization, says power demand is expected to soar as a result of the data centers, and tech companies are turning to fossil fuels to provide that power.
We're looking at having to put together 4 new Seattle's worth of energy in order to power all these data centers. And my question would be why we shouldn't be going back to using more fossil fuels to power data centers.
The report calls on leaders in Oregon and Washington to impose more regulations on the centers, including transparency around water and energy use and a ban on fossil fuels and new nuclear. The report also calls for tech companies to be responsible for developing new renewable energy to supply the centers, helping the region stay on track to meet its climate goals. Campbell says part of the problem is there's still a lot the public doesn't know about data centers because operators keep details hidden. She adds the Oregonian newspaper had to sue the Dalles and Google to find out how much water Google was using in theirs. The company claimed it was a trade secret.
Our researchers had a hard time even finding basic facts like how many data centers there are, where are they located, how much energy do they use, how much water do they use.
A failed bill in Washington state this year would have regulated data centers and imposed transparency measures, but Campbell says operators like Microsoft and Amazon fought hard against it. She says Columbia Riverkeeper has called for a moratorium on construction of any new centers. At least, she says, data centers should pay their fair share. Last year's Power Act, passed in Oregon, directs regulators to make large energy users responsible for their own energy costs instead of being subsidized by residents. I'm Isabel Charlet, Washington News Service.
A Trump-hired national security official resigns over the Iran war as dissatisfaction over the price of gas rises. Illinois voters nominate candidates for general election. And the U.S. Senate begins debate on the SAVE Act. With those stories and more, it's Zimon Perez with 2026 Talks.
Welcome to 2026 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
Iran was a threat, and many people, many of the greatest military scholars are saying for years that presidents should have taken out Iran because they wanted a nuclear weapon.
President Donald Trump is dismissing the key argument in a resignation letter addressed to him. Joe Kent was a Special Forces and CIA vet before leading the National Counterterrorism Center. In his letter, Kent argued Iran, quote, posed no imminent threat to U.S. security. Kent, who's accused of white supremacy, also says Israeli officials and their media allies spread disinformation to get Trump to start the Iran war. The average price of gas has risen more than a quarter since Iran stopped most oil shipments through the vital Strait of Hormuz. Industry CEOs say they expect it to go higher. The Senate kicked off a marathon debate on the SAVE Act, which would require strict proof of citizenship to register or vote. Trump is refusing to sign any other legislation until it's passed. But without the votes to change the Senate filibuster rules, his allies hope to hold the floor to force it through. New Jersey Democratic Senator Andy Kim calls it an anti-democratic maneuver from a deeply unpopular administration.
Instead of ending this war and getting gas prices down, instead of focusing on working families, Donald Trump has Senate Republicans here to peddle a bill because, in his words, quote, it'll guarantee the midterms.
Illinois voters may be shaping the next generation of politics in the blue state. For the first time in nearly 80 years, there are five Democratic-leaning House seats open, along with the Senate office long held by Dick Durbin. Progressive Lieutenant Governor Juliana Stratton looks likely to secede Durbin by narrowly defeating Liberal Representative Raja Krishnamoorthy. A bid to return to Congress by scandal-plagued Jesse Jackson Jr., son of the late civil rights leader, has failed. County Commissioner Donna Cook won in the South Chicago 2nd District. In the 7th, Chicago City Treasurer Melissa Conyers-Irvin, backed by the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, closely trails State Senator LaShawn Ford. Ford received the endorsement of the retiring progressive incumbent. Evanston Mayor Daniel Biss is narrowly leading in a bruising and at times negative three-way contest in the 9th District. He's beating journalist and social media influencer Kat Abu-Ghazaleh, along with State Senator Laura Fine, in the race to secede longtime progressive stalwart Jane Schakowsky. Fine was also supported by AIPAC. The night might disappoint the Israeli lobby following a stinging defeat in a special House election in New Jersey. Several California anti-ICE protesters shot by police last summer are suing. They say law enforcement did not follow transparency and use of force rules. John Lindsay Poland with the American Friends Service Committee says police use tear gas and rubber bullets on journalists and peaceful protesters.
Militarized equipment has become very normalized. Often it's made to sound like these de-escalation tools. That phrase is frequently used for armored vehicles and launchers of rubber bullets.
I'm Simone Perez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the KABU Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for KABU News in Depth. Hanna Francis interviews Street Roots about their recent story, Young Activists Reimagine Care for Children of Incarcerated Parents. At 6, it's Sea Change Radio. At 6:30, it's Free Culture Radio. Then at 7, stick around for Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather, look for clouds with an overnight low of 49 degrees. Tomorrow, expect more clouds with sun breaks and an above-average high temperature in the upper 60s. Today in music history, March 18, 1911, American composer and songwriter Irving Berlin copyrights the biggest pop song of the earliest 20th century, Alexander's Ragtime Band. The tune became a multi-million selling smash hit that helped turn American popular music into a major international phenomenon. The quote of the day is from American writer and civil rights activist James Baldwin, who said, quote, "Love takes off masks that we can fear we cannot live without and know we cannot live within," end quote.
Under a bipartisan bill given final okay by the Wisconsin State Legislature, legal online sports betting would be subject to increased oversight through in-state tribal computer servers. Tribal leaders and state legislators agree it's good public policy. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Legal online sports betting in Wisconsin would have to go through in-state tribal computer servers under a bipartisan bill given final okay by the state legislature Tuesday. Chuck Kornbach reports.
Supporters and critics of online sports betting acknowledge it frequently occurs in Wisconsin. Gamblers go through commercial companies like DraftKings. But the Wisconsin Constitution says most legal betting can only occur on sovereign tribal properties here, regulated by state tribal gaming compacts. The just-passed bill by the legislature attempts to reinforce that online sports bets in the state must go through the 11 federally recognized tribes in Wisconsin. Shannon Holsey is president of the Stockbridge Muncie Band of Mohican Indians. She says the new legislation is good public policy.
It provides clarity, respect to tribal sovereignty, and it strengthens Wisconsin's longstanding state and tribal partnership. And especially for our tribe and all tribes, it really creates opportunity while allowing us to grow responsibly, securely, and on our own terms.
Holsey says any additional revenue for the Stockbridge Muncie would go toward funding things like tribal housing, health care, and public safety. Remarks opposing the Wisconsin sports betting bill center on what critics say is the possibility of more people becoming addicted to gambling. Steve Nass is a Republican state senator.
Making gambling easier and more accessible online will only accelerate these harms. Family breakdown, lost productivity, addiction treatment.
But other supporters of the sports betting bill say more ways to prevent problem gambling could now be negotiated with the tribes. Wisconsin Governor Tony Evers still has to sign the legislation, and the federal government still has to okay amended gaming compacts. For National Native News, I'm Chuck Quernbach.
Jesse Holmes was the first musher to reach the end of the 1,000-mile trail from Anchorage to Nome, winning his second consecutive Iditarod. As KMBA's Rhonda McBride reports, Indigenous mushers were still out on the trail Wednesday morning.
Pete Kaiser, a Yupik from Bethel, and Ryan Reddington, an Inupiaq from Kinnick, were finishing their mandatory 8-hour rest in White Mountain, one of the last two checkpoints in the race. Both former champions were hoping for a repeat, but Kaiser says his team contracted a stomach virus on the trail, so he rested them more to give them time to recover. Kaiser told the Iditarod Insider that this changed his focus.
I've been kind of reminiscing and soaking in the sights more than ever, trying to be in the moment more than stressing out about placement and different things like that. So, of course, it would have been fun to be further up, but that's not always in the cards. And I've had a good trip.
Kaiser's team is positioned to finish in the top 10. He says the cold, dry snow on the Bering Sea coast has been one of the biggest challenges because it sticks to the sled runners. Reddington, who was running not far behind Kaiser, told the Iditarod Insider this last stretch of trail has also tested his team.
Hopefully we get a little less wind. And if it is windy, I'm going to take a lot more rest.
There were also three rookie Indigenous mushers in the race. Jesse Terry, an Anishinaabe from Ontario, is in 16th place, and Kevin Hansen, an Inupiaq from Kotzebue, in 21st. Jody Potts-Joseph, a Han Gwich'in from Eagle Village, who had to contend with bison on the trail, pulled out of the race yesterday after her team came down with kennel cough. She said that she had to put her team first. In Anchorage, I'm Rhonda McBride.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
White House National Economic Council Director Kevin Hassett said in an interview yesterday, if the war were to be extended, it wouldn't really disrupt the U.S. economy much at all. It would hurt consumers, and we'd have to think about, you know, if that continued, what we would have to do about that. But that's like really the last of our concerns right now, because we're really very confident that this thing is going ahead of schedule. Arizona Senator Ruben Gallego responded, Trump economic advisor says consumer pain is the last of their concerns. Tell that to Americans paying almost twice as much for gas as they were a month ago. Since the U.S. and Israel's first strikes on February 28th, gas prices have gone from a national average of $3 per gallon of regular unleaded gas to $3.79 a gallon. Besides being the path of much oil experts, the Strait of Hormuz is also a crucial choke point for the global fertilizers supply chain, restricting supply right as spring planting season has begun. The war in Iran has cost U.S. taxpayers $12 billion in the first 2 weeks.
Americans are accruing over $134 billion in credit card interest payments each day. Over 40% of U.S. adults are unable to pay off their cards every month. These are the findings of a study by the Century Foundation and Protect Borrowers that was released yesterday. The average interest rate on credit cards in America is around 25%. The report says that, quote, since Trump's inauguration alone, the average annual amount that Americans pay in credit card bills grew by an additional $1,177. Senator Elizabeth Warren said, quote, Trump could work with Congress to deliver on his promise to cap credit card interest rates at 10%, saving the average American with credit card debt about $900 a year. But he is too busy siding with Wall Street, end quote. According to a recent consumer credit review by Experian, the highest average credit card balances are held by Generation X adults ages 45 to 60, who are straddling the upper $8,000 to $9,000 range. Following in second place are millennials ages 30 to 44, with average balances in the $6,500 to $7,500 range. The lowest balances are held by Generation Z adults and seniors over 65, ranging from $4,000 to $5,000.
The chilly Nordic countries of Sweden, Finland, and Norway lead the world in residential heat pump adoption. Dr. Anthony Lizowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. A growing number of people in cold northern regions are switching to energy-efficient electric heat pumps. In fact, Norway, Finland, and Sweden have some of the highest heat pump adoption rates in the world. Years ago, electric heat pumps could not efficiently heat homes in these regions. But today, some models can keep homes warm and cozy, even in sub-zero temperatures.
Heat pumps are a great climate solution because they are extremely energy efficient.
Abby Hawes of Ethos Green Power Cooperative in Wisconsin says electric heat pumps do not generate heat. Instead, they work like a reverse air conditioner, extracting heat from outside, even during frigid weather, and transferring it into your home.
It does feel really crazy that there is still heat energy outside, even down negative 22. It is out there. It feels cold to us. However, this technology is able to capture it and transfer that heat inside.
When buying a cold climate heat pump, Haas says to check the lowest temperature rating, make sure the condenser has a baseband heater so it doesn't freeze up, and look at the heating seasonal performance factor. The higher the number, the more efficient the unit, and the lower your utility bills will be. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
KBOO News poet Dan Raphael has a lot of questions about the Iran war.
What's the plan? How will Trump know he's won? Didn't anyone see what a problem the Straits of Hormuz would be? Why kill over 160 girls in the school? Why destroy desalination plants so people will run out of water? Did the guys who wrote the Constitution foresee anything like Trump coming along? Maybe some secret amendment marked open only in case of an insane warmonger president. Can we get Trump out of the White House before the war starts killing people here in America? The oil companies and the weapons makers are ecstatic, but maybe enough other businesses will lose enough profits to do something. They're where the power is. Russia may be placated by oil profits, but what about China? Will it join the fray or see this as an opportunity to expand and profit somewhere else, like Taiwan? And right next to the Middle East, India could crack open with its own partisan violence. Was this war started for any reason but one very flawed man's need for attention and our democracy already so corrupted that he's able to get away with it? Is the game dominoes, whack-a-mole, fallout, or? For poetic justice, this is Dan Raphael.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, March 18th, 2026. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-801-1378. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Dan Raphael, Dave Johnson, Hannah Francis, Althea Billings. The producer is Dave Johnson, and our engineer is Ray Bodwell. Special thanks to Zamron Perez, Antonia Gonzalez, Mark Richardson, Isabel Charlet, and Dr. Anthony Lizowitz. The director of the evening news is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, in K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Terrence Burns.
And I'm Josh Salem. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO's News in Depth.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You're listening to KBOO News in Depth. I'm Hannah Francis. Street Roots is a nonprofit organization in Portland, Oregon that creates income opportunities for people experiencing homelessness and poverty by producing a newspaper and other media that are catalysts for individual and social change. Today we're talking about Street Root correspondent Anna Wilcox's recent article, Young Activists Reimagine Care for Children of Incarcerated Parents. They fought through the system when they were young, and now they're calling on lawmakers to pay attention. I have here with me Jessica Katz, the Executive Director of Family Preservation Project, and Street Roots correspondent Anna Wilcox. We were also joined by Family Preservation Project's Reentry Doula Coordinator, Vanessa Sherrod, as well as Vanessa's daughter, one of the founding members